first speaker, which is Melanie Gaffield. I'm particularly grateful to Melanie to come and participate this afternoon. I feel I've made contact with many people in the Ministry of Defence trying to secure a speaker to speak on this, not because they're unwillingness, but simply because they're a very busy group of people. So I'm very grateful for Melanie to be able to make the time to come and address us this afternoon, and I'd like to hand the podium over to her to kick off this second half.
I forgot my presentation, so you're going to have to bear with not looking at the screen, looking at me, and hopefully I'll remember everything that I was going to say. So I represent the Defence Science Technology Laboratory, DSTL, and we are an MOD-funded organisation that looks into science and technology to support the military in the UK. I work personally in the Biomedical Sciences Department, so we look at all sorts of biological parts of the research, bacteria, viruses, also things like immunology, human behavioural, protection, combat casualty care. So I thought one thing I'd like to start with is just although we don't actually do any synthetic biology per se, at the moment we certainly use the underlying technology, the DNA sequencing and synthesis. But we do have an interest in it, and we can see there's quite a lot of potential benefits and opportunities from synthetic biology that could be of use to defence and to the military. This one, I think, is in the area of health, and I just want to run through some of the areas we think it might be applicable. The first one is disease diagnostics. There are potentials that we could use ways of predicting or telling if somebody has been affected by a disease before they're actually symptomatic, so before they start showing the symptoms, which means that we can then get the treatment to them quicker and have a better chance of perhaps they're not even falling sick. Tissue engineering is another one. Obviously, in military conflict, people get injured, and if we can kind of the synthetic biology might be used to help treat injuries in that context. The big one, I guess, is things like drug production, both for what we call pre and post exposures, so things like vaccines to prevent disease before it occurs, and in post exposure to what people have already got a disease that we can give them medical information to help the sickness. Another area is in the environmental side of things. There's been discussion of biosensors where we can detect chemicals, toxins, or even explosives, so maybe we could be used for landmine detection. The other area is in bioremediation, where maybe an area is contaminated with chemicals or toxins, and we can help remove that contamination through biosynthesis of various compounds using synthetic biology. One of the big ones people have talked about is biofuels, a potential of making aviation fuel through this technology. So again, that's something that the Ministry of Defence could use. And then there's lots of others, such as biocircuitry, computing, nanoparticles, biofabrication. There's the possibility of making stronger, lighter fabrics for protective clothing. Obviously, when people think of defence, you also think of offence, and the first thing that springs to mind is, of course, the misuse of products. Could bacteria or viruses be synthesised and used in anger? And it's something, I guess, that we've already touched on. One of the first things I would say is, although obviously it is possible at the moment to synthesise bacterial genes, viral genes, at the moment it still takes quite a lot of expertise to do that, quite a lot of equipment, and the chances of somebody doing it, I think, are still quite remote. The other thing when we consider in biodefence is whoever does that, they also have to make sufficient quantities, and they have to think about the dissemination, how they're going to get it out there and infect the population. And actually, they're no trivial things either. So as a whole package, it's not impossible, but it's perhaps still quite improbable. DSTL, as I say, doesn't have an ongoing programme, but we are just something we're aware of, and particularly things like the biosecurity, and we personally take that very seriously in all the work we do in our labs. But we also provide advice to government, both the MOD and other government departments, and get involved in various steering groups. And some of the reports and things that have been mentioned, I think the DSTL have had input into. The Biological Toxin Convention, Warfare Convention, has been mentioned and written and signed up to that, and that's something obviously that we are involved with. The Australian group that looks at the export of materials and equipment, again, we have inputs into that. When we look at how do we control these things, is it self-government, is it state government, I think whoever rules it, then it has to be responsibility all along the line. I think it starts right at the very beginning in academia, with education of the new students and scientists, to be aware of potential problems and how they can reduce the risks as much as possible. The scientist that comes up with that new idea, they've got a responsibility in thinking what that new idea is, what are the potential risks for the environment, for the population. No science is done without funding, so it's up to the funding body, again, to review that science and for them to decide, is it safe, should it be done? It has to be done somewhere, so it's up to the research institute to govern their own people and what they're doing. The suppliers, I mean, when we talk of synthetic biology, particularly things like DNA sequences, DNA synthesis, whether supplying that equipment and those chemicals and those bioblocks, they have some responsibility as to whether or not it's a good use. And I know that a lot of the DNA sequence people are now starting to look at sequences and checking whether they are, from what organisms they're coming from, and whether they are potentially pathogenic or toxin elements involved. And then we go to things like publishers of journals and, I guess, production industry. They, again, have a say in this as to whether they should be publishing that information or whether they should be producing something. I guess one of the big stories that has been talked about with synthetic biology is the malarial drug, which is artemisinin, which is the same, made by synthetic biology, this could be made and produced in much larger quantities and obviously could help save a lot of people's lives in the third world. There is the other sort of flip side of the coin that I think we should be considering, and that's things like it is already produced obviously naturally from plants, and there are farmers in East Asia and Africa whose livelihoods are depending on growing and providing those plants. So as we start to make it synthetically, we are taking away people's livelihoods. So I think we always have to balance everything that we're doing. I think I've just about covered my bits, which if I've rattled through that rather quickly, and again for the lack of slides. Sorry about that.
Thank you.